Hello and welcome to the Local Government Chronicles News Roundup podcast. This is episode 4 of series 2. My name's Martin George. I'm the deputy editor of LGC. I'm joined by our reporter, Kwame Fwakshe. Kwame, hello.
Hi, Martin.
And by Kirsty Weekly, our head of content. Hi, Kirsty.
Hi, Martin.
So I think we'll cover three sort of general themes today. We'll talk about local government audit, and I promise it's really interesting. Don't switch off. We'll talk about the first sort of milestone of the COVID inquiry, which has reached the end of its first module this week. And we'll explore whether we think government is going to allow councils to start holding virtual meetings again. If you're lucky, we'll have some time at the end. I'll tell you some hilarious jokes about the local government pension scheme generated by artificial intelligence. So that'll keep you listening if nothing else does. Now, the whole LGC team yesterday, we went to a all-party parliamentary group reception about local government. And Lee Rowley, the local government minister, was speaking at it. Now, of all the issues he could have talked about, finance, cost of living, devolution, adult social care, housing, the one he seemed to focus in on was local government audit. Seems like a funny choice unless you know why. Kirsty, can you explain?
It wasn't didn't seem like a funny choice to me, but then I was one of, I'm sure, many people who were watching the Commons Levelling Up Housing and Communities committee session the day before, where Lee Rowley spent 90 minutes being quizzed about audit and how he was going to deal with the backlogs. So something that was very much on his mind, very much on my mind, and actually very much on a lot of councils' minds, given that this, the local audit completion rates for 2021-22 is still just 27%. And there are some outstanding audits dating back as far as 2015-16. And this really does matter because, audit is one of the key ways that we can be assured, not just us as journalists, but the public generally, government, and councils themselves, that that financial accounts are being done properly, that there is, the money is where it is supposed to be, that things have been done sensibly. And that's why the government is obviously keen to sort this problem out. To make sure that there aren't any problems brewing that should be intercepted sooner rather than getting to a late stage and becoming a much bigger problem.
Exactly. So it's things like, when we've seen a number of councils effectively going bankrupt the last year or so.
Yeah.
Some people say, had problems been picked up earlier, that had been addressed earlier, yeah, and we wouldn't have the sort of catastrophic situation facing some councils. What's been causing this backlog? Because this is a legal requirement for councils to file these accounts,
yeah,
and they've got certain deadlines. It hasn't been happening. What's gone wrong?
Yeah, so there's a big capacity problem, both on the auditor side, having the number of qualified, experienced staff to actually do the work of audit. And at the same time, having accounts have become much more complicated, especially as councils have started doing more and more complex things. There's attempts to align various bits with other financial reporting standards, which all just, if you've ever looked at a set of council accounts, they go on for ages. Council accounts aren't unique in that. It's happening in other sectors as well. Accounting is getting complicated as the world is getting complicated. So that's the sort of main challenge, is actually just getting it done. And the bigger the backlog gets, the harder it is to play catch up. So you just have a bit of a self-fulfilling problem there.
Yeah, absolutely. And reading your story about the minister's comments at the committee, I mean, there's some things which seem a bit bizarre on the face of it that council auditors have to do. It was an example of having to value a historic Roman, yeah, road in one local authority.
So I think this is something the sector will broadly welcome, is the minister, Lee Rowley, acknowledging that there's a proportionality issue here where councils are having to value sort of fixed assets that are never going to be sold, like the Roman road that's running through his constituency, and whether they're spending too much time and energy on these parts of it. But he described it as an open question. I think no decisions have been made yet. I don't think anyone should be thinking, oh goody, we can delete huge chunks of our, put some red lines through it and say we don't have to worry about that. I think the plan is that over the summer discussions will continue with sort of system partners involving the National Audit Office, the Chartered Institute for Public Finance and Accountancy, the Financial Reporting Council, the various other people, and obviously council chief executives and Section 151 officers will be involved in those discussions as well. So I think coming to some sort of sensible agreements about what the sort of refresh deadlines might be is the sort of target that they've set themselves, and how it'll all look is still sort of to be decided, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned how complicated council accounts are, just for somebody to read and try and understand. I mean, is there any hope that at the end of this they'll find a way to simplify them, to make them more user-friendly, to help, I mean, voters essentially, yes, also backbench councillors, let's be honest, understand what the councils have been doing financially?
Yeah, it is something that comes up quite a lot. It's something that the MPs on the Levelling Up Committee are quite keen to emphasise, that council accounts are sometimes quite difficult to understand. It's not something that's at the top of the government's agenda. I think in his responses to the MPs, Lee Rowley was saying that the priority is to sort the backlog out rather than start trying to simplify the language. Because actually you might run the risk of creating further delays as you start making those kinds of changes to introduce, I think, what a lot of people would call for would be sort of summary pages that explain in clearer terms what's in the accounts as alongside the set of accounts. And it's not hard to see how that creates an extra layer of work somewhere.
Eventually we'll sort of move towards that, but that's not the priority right now by the sounds of it.
No, I think the aspiration is to sort the backlog out first and then start dealing with that side of it. So we'll see if we ever get there.
Now, this week has also been a bit of a milestone for the COVID inquiry. It's just come to the end of module one, which is the bit that's looking at resilience and preparedness before COVID actually struck. I mean, we're recording this on Wednesday. I think we've just had the closing statements from the sort of core participants who are taking part in the inquiry. And Kwame, I know you've been following a lot of this. We've recently had some evidence from a real big figure in local government, Mark Lloyd, Chief Exec of the Local Government Association. He had some quite shocking stuff to say, actually, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, that's right, Martin. He actually revealed that the LGA weren't made aware of Exercise Alice, which was a pandemic preparedness exercise, until the COVID inquiry was launched. It's quite shocking that that this pandemic preparedness exercise wasn't shared with sectors with the local government sector. He actually described it in his witness statement as surprising and regrettable that the conclusions and results hadn't been shared with the LGA. And it's surprising that it wasn't shared. And he also highlighted that Exercise Winter Willow, which was an influenza pandemic preparedness exercise, which took place in 2017, was shared with local government without consequence. And he also highlighted that there is an approach to secrecy around the conclusions, which is surprising. You would think that these exercises would take place and that they would share the results with local government so that the sector could better prepare for something like a pandemic. So it's a bit strange that that they weren't even aware that the exercise even took place.
And it's not just sort of an abstract point or local government being a bit annoyed that, you know, it wasn't given its respect or anything. I mean, is it right he was saying that some of these exercises actually were the first ones that had a look at how quarantine might be involved or something, and that could have really helped councils preparing plans that would have then swung into action, you know, come March, April 2020? I mean, this could have real world effects and could have made our response a lot worse than it could have been.
Yeah, that's correct. He actually said that it was the first time that quarantine had featured in planning, and it would have changed what they were doing in local planning to have that kind of knowledge. So it's very surprising that it wasn't shared with them. And he actually was a very sort of insistent that without this information, they're not planning in the way that they should be, and which can have significant consequences.
Yeah, and also I know that I think the inquiry itself had asked the LGA to do a survey of the local government sector looking at some of this stuff. Is it right they had like a 100% response rate, which is as conclusive as you can get from these kind of things? But what were the kind of the how well did local government think it was prepared before the pandemic struck?
Well, it wasn't great. So it was 353 authorities in total, 22 Welsh and 331 English. But less than a fifth of councils that participated in the survey felt they were adequately funded for a national emergency in January 2020. the survey also found that 80% of councils in England felt they had been fully prepared for an influenza pandemic. However, if they had been fully prepared for a COVID pandemic, 69% of English authorities said that they were, with a number of those who said they were not prepared, noting the scale and impact of the unexpected challenges. The survey also found that support and guidance they received from central government in January 2020 was neither adequate nor inadequate, with nearly a quarter of authorities calling it inadequate. So yeah, not the most positive of results from the LGA survey there.
No, not at all. And some of that comes back to evidence we had from Matt Hancock. Remember, he was Health and Social Care Secretary during the first stage of the pandemic. And he told the inquiry, I forget the exact words, but implying that local government performed very badly, or you didn't really have preparations in place. I think only two councils, he said, had flu pandemic plans in place. That survey and then some of the evidence today, local government is pushing back against that allegation, isn't it?
Yeah, that's correct. So in his closing statement, Robin Allen Casey, who is counsel for the LGA and the LGA in Wales, disputed the evidence given by Matt Hancock. He actually said that the department had far more levers. Matt Hancock said something about not having the levers to act during the pandemic, but he said that they had far more levers to understand, oversee and shape social care provision than Matt Hancock's evidence suggested. So local government firmly pushing back against what Matt Hancock said last month.
Yeah. Now, so that's the end of module one. And I think we're expecting the report sometime in 2024 for that section. So there'll be a busy few weeks months for the council to really look at all the evidence and the statements. But I know, Kirsty, we've sort of had some pretty comprehensive coverage, everyone from David Cameron at the start right up to your council to the LGA today.
Yeah, so we've been covering this all the way through. We've covered the evidence from Sir Michael Marmot right at the beginning, a lot of the big politicians who were involved at the time and their views of local government. So as you mentioned, David Cameron, George Osborne, Jeremy Hunt in his previous role as health secretary. Obviously he's now the chancellor. There's fairly comprehensive coverage on our site, plus lots of the key local government figures like Mark Lloyd and Jim McManus from ADES.
The director of public health side of things, isn't it?
Yeah.
Jim?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And then I guess in terms of looking forwards, module two of the inquiry opens first hearings, I think 3rd of October, so a little way away. And that'll be looking at core UK decision making and political governance. So, and again, the Local Government Association is a core participant of that. There'll be strong local government interest in what that part of the inquiry looks at and finds, I guess.
Thank you. And expect more coverage.
Yeah, absolutely. Moving on quickly, virtual meetings. It's another sort of pandemic related one, this, isn't it? Because obviously during lockdown, councils moved to virtual meetings. they're not allowed to have virtual meetings at the moment, but there's a big push to have virtual meetings allowed again. Kirsty, bring us up to date.
Yeah, so at the end of last week, I spoke to Baroness McIntosh of Pickering, a Conservative peer, who had tabled the amendment to the Levelling Up and Regeneration Bill about bringing back virtual meetings for local government. Her argument for doing this is that it's hypocritical for the Lords not to back this, given that many Lords committees do meet virtually and in hybrid ways. It makes it easier to participate fully if you've got family commitments or you need to be somewhere else for whatever reason. So the Lords backed it. She had support from Labour peers, Lib Dem peers, and various other peers. So the government was defeated. It's made it onto the bill. But that's not where it ends, unfortunately. Well, depending on your point of view, but the bill will go back to the Commons, where they will decide whether or not to accept the amendments that the Lords have made. So there's a very good chance that this will get struck off again if the government feels it's not minded to endorse virtual meetings.
Yeah, I know something. I know at the parliamentary reception yesterday, you know, quite a few peers and MPs and sort of your local government advocates were talking about this, weren't they? I mean, did you get a sense in the room that anyone thought the government would give way on this and would say, actually, you know what, let's accept this amendment, let's allow virtual meetings to recommence?
I don't think there was a lot of optimism about it. I think there's some councils have taken a pragmatic approach. I was speaking to someone who said that in their authority at the moment, they do hybrid meetings. It just means you don't get to vote, and there's sometimes a bit of trade-offs in that. So you still make your points in that meeting. You just, you know, if you've already got the, if you know how the vote is going to go, one doesn't always make a great deal of difference. But it's a bit ad hoc and it's a bit informal. I think the sector would prefer it to be on a proper footing to be able to do this.
Yeah, I think there's probably strong support in the sector for that. I think the other thing it's worth noting is that this has been a bit of a U-turn for the government, because I remember, you know, back in 2021, it quite wanted virtual meetings to continue, and it actually asked the High Court to rule whether the existing legislation allowed this, and the court said no, and the government was kind of disappointed. 2 years later, and you know, we're in the culture wars, we're having the Daily Mail attacking, you know, remote working and all this, and the government is not taking up this opportunity to actually allow virtual meetings to happen again. So it kind of feels like it's got caught up in a wider cultural issue, and the government has sort of just quietly just changed its mind on it.
Yeah. I mean, of course, the government today isn't the same as the government 2 years ago.
I was going to say, that was, I don't know how many prime ministers ago, but that was, several eras previously, I guess.
But yeah, I think there's other sort of signs that the government isn't, you know, they've been pushing everyone back into the office, which actually I think hasn't, you know, I think most workplaces are still operating some sort of hybrid approach. Definitely that was the findings of the LGC confidence survey earlier this year. Most councils are still operating in a hybrid kind of structure, with people coming in roughly 2 days a week, depending on their roles. Obviously office-based staff, I think there's some staff who's, you know, actually lots of staff whose jobs aren't in the office, and they've never been working from home or hybrid. It's important to remember that when we have these discussions.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll see how that plays out. We probably won't know for a while until it goes back to the Commons, but I think there's a pretty good feeling there that, you know, we're not going to see these meetings coming back virtually. So just to end on a lighter but maybe not funnier note, last week I was at one of our LGC pensions conferences, so I thought, right, let's challenge AI. We've heard about AI a lot. So I asked ChatGTP, tell us the funniest jokes it knows about the government's flagship reform of the local government pension scheme, which is called calling. So guys, are you braced? Are you ready? Do you want to hear the funniest AI jokes about local government pension scheme pooling? Okay.
Yeah.
Why did the pension fund manager take up swimming lessons? Because they wanted to master the art of pooling in and out of water, exclamation mark. I'm not hearing many laughs on that one. Next one. What did the local government... There's more. Oh, yeah, yeah. What did the local government pension scheme say to the stock market?
I don't know. What did the local government pension scheme say to the stock market, Martin?
It's worth waiting for. Hey, let's take a dip together and go for a swim in the pooling waters of prosperity, exclamation mark.
So exclamation marks.
Yeah. So I think, you know, AI, it might be about to kill us all in a few years' time, apparently, but it'll leave us smiling as it kills us. So that's a happy note to end the podcast on. Thanks everyone for listening. It's a pleasure as always. Do review the podcast on whatever platform you use. Do subscribe to it. Do tell your friends about it. And do read all the rest of our coverage about the COVID inquiry, Levelling Up Bill, and everything else on lgcplus.com. Thanks very much and see you next week.